Talk Radio 790 KBC, Peter Tilden at 10. Apparently, we're having a little bit of a technical difficulty. Stevie, let me know when we're good here to go. Hopefully, let me go give me a signal here. By the way, be careful for the rain because it's coming. Be real careful. You know how you guys drive, and we have no runoff on the highway. So, here we go with Graham Wood. Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10 continues. Hour number two with Graham Wood, national correspondent at The Atlantic. He's also a lecturer in political science at Yale University, author of The Refugee Detectives, Inside Germany's High-Stakes Operation to Sort People Fleeing Death from Opportunists and Pretenders. It's from the April 2018 issue of The Atlantic. Also the author of The Way of Strangers, Encounters with the Islamic State. And good morning, Graham. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Before we get into your piece, which was fascinating, just fascinating, I got to ask you about your first piece that I saw you tweeted in The Atlantic 2007 about the weather and weather modification and the fact that there was a D.C. council member, Trayon White Sr., who claims that the Jews were responsible basically for the weather and the snowing in D.C. the other day, and then, of course, shot back later on saying that's not, he clarified, that's not what I meant. The Jews only control, I guess, some of the weather. Have we made great strides since your original piece, and did you find a lot of Jews basically controlling weather everywhere?
I found a lot of people talking about controlling the weather, but it was actually Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison of Texas, definitely not a Jew, who was most interested in weather modification at the time. That piece in 2007 was mostly about how we can change the directions of hurricanes. But when I was discovering the strides we had made in that, which we got a little bit closer but still haven't been able to do it, I found that there was actually a pretty robust science about how we can modify the weather, mostly to make it rain a little bit more in arid places. But, it's definitely not something that I would attribute mainly to Jews.
And the piece was fantastic because when you talk about trying to alter a hurricane or tornado, the liability there is insane because if you're helping people, you're also hurting people. That was also a pretty cool piece.
Thank you very much. Well, yeah, the size of a hurricane or a tornado, that we're talking about something that's more powerful than a bunch of nuclear weapons. So if you think, oh, maybe I can steer that hurricane a little bit to the left, you're basically deciding to drop an atomic bomb on a city. So it's not a consequence-free decision.
Also, I mean, just as a thesis, the Jews can't stop the continuous drizzle every day in Delray Beach. So I don't think they have any effect on the weather. That's proof because it would affect shuffleboard down there, and they would do it if they could. So moving on to the refugee detectives, fascinating because of where we are in the world today and how we're looking at the refugee situation. You talk about the refugee tsunami where you have millions of refugees crossing into Europe, and the assimilation is tough, and you have pushback, and you have the fact that Angela Merkel barely won an election because of the pushback. And how Germany decided to deal with this. You're the first journalist who was, I think, given full access to their program on how they decide on how they verify who should be allowed in the country as a true refugee and who's kind of trying to scam the system. It was really, really fascinating. How did you, A, decide to do the story, and how did you get access?
Well, the first thing I had to do was figure out how to write about this problem. I mean, as you say, millions of people streaming into the continent, about a million into Germany alone over the course of about a year. And what I wanted to find out was, where does the rubber hit the road on this? Because there is, at some point, an interaction between every individual who shows up and the German government determining whether that person can stay. And a lot of them get turned away. I mean, we're talking like a quarter to a third of the people who arrive and ask for asylum are told, no, you can't have it. And Germany has a long and robust tradition, going back to the post-war, of trying to respect the rights of foreigners, of immigrants, and it created a lot of refugees once, and it wants to remedy that. So they want to do right by people who are trying to flee war. But what I really wanted to find out was how do they do it? How do those interactions happen? And so I went to the German refugee agency and said, "All right, show me what you're doing. Show me how you're digesting a million people into your body politic." And they said, "All right, we'll show you everything we've figured out, and you can see it." So that's what I did, kind of ride along with the German refugee agency.
Well, and there's mind-blowing stuff in here, and I know there's stuff you can't reveal. The first thing I do want to point out, though, is that Angela Merkel's slogan, "Wir schaffen das," literally translates to "we can do it," which is what Rob Schneider says in all of the Adam Sandler movies. "We can do it!" Did she realize that she's got Rob Schneider's slogan?
I mean, Angela Merkel, what she says, this, wir schaffen das, what she's really saying is she's trying to convey to Germans, this is not easy. We can manage it. It's not going to be fun. It's not going to be easy, but we can do it. And that's what she staked her political reputation on. So a lot of Germans are going to be looking into their cities, seeing new faces there, seeing new communities that need to be brought in carefully, and then say, all right, well, whether wir really can schaffen das is how we're going to decide whether Angela Merkel's government stays in power. So it's a really big deal politically.
Yeah, and the other thing we're talking about is that there's currency there, that she's convincing the doubters and naysayers that there's a process here, there's a policy in place, and we're honoring what you're saying also, that hey, for people who are upset about all this immigration, we've got a handle on it and we're doing it right. So talk about the Federal Office for Migration and Refugees, because some of the things you were allowed to talk about, and some I'm sure you weren't, are pretty stunning, how they figure this out and how they interview people.
This is an agency that is in Nuremberg, Germany. So think of the Nuremberg rallies. Think about the Third Reich. This is in one of the old Nazi-built buildings in there. And it's a federal agency whose whole job is to take in refugees, figure out which ones are real and which ones are not, and then send back the ones who are not. Now, I was able to go there and see the technology that they were implementing. So that they, in the past, they would just take down your name, and then they would interview you, and they'd do their best to figure out whether you really were from where you were saying you were from, and whether you feared death or torture on your return. Now they have all sorts of technological additions. So they have, first of all, just a way to track people's names. I mean, it used to be you just told them your name, and they pretty much have to take you at your word. Now they would have facial recognition. So if you've ever had any interaction with the German government, if you ever applied for a visa somewhere, they're going to be able to see whether you are some other person who went by a different name from a different place once upon a time.
And the interviewers, they're highly trained, correct?
Well, they're ordinary German people who don't know anything about Syria or Iran through their normal life, but who have been trained as detectives. I mean, these are people who they're trying to turn them into a Sherlock Holmes who can talk to someone who claims to be from Syria and figure out whether that person's from Syria, even if the German himself may have never left, you know, lederhosen-wearing Bavaria.
such a great photo, a picture of the lederhosen on the guy. I don't know how that took off. But they start asking him specific questions. Like you said, they don't have to know, but they can ask him about schools. They can ask him about, like you point out, I think City Hall and some other things. And then they can basically track that via social media and computer data to say that's not where the McDonald's is in your hometown. That is not where, it doesn't matter what they say, they can verify what they're saying pretty quickly, correct?
Over the course of about 10 minutes, they'll ask them some really pointed questions. And you can imagine, if I'm asking you questions about your hometown, and I want to find out if you really are from, I don't know, whichever part of L.A. you might be from, and I say, you know, what's the best taqueria in your area? And then you give me some answer that my database shows there is no taqueria at that corner, or it's not a good one. Either of these things might reveal that you're not actually from where you say you're from. But they have only 10 minutes to do that, so they have to really have a rich database from which to draw those pointed questions. If they get it wrong, though, think of the consequences. I mean, these people are claiming to be from Syria. If they're actually from Syria, but they get sent back because the person who's interviewing them doesn't think they're actually from there, they might be sent back to their death. So this is 10 minutes of pointed questions.
Whoa.
With a really, really high consequence, either for letting them in falsely or letting them out falsely.
Talking to Graham Wood, the article's The Refugee Detectives, which you should read. It is stunning and mind-blower. The other thing you mentioned is people come in, they lie about their passports. There's a bunch of stuff you talk about. They lie about their passports because passport can, A, show where you're from, but also show your age, and people want to lie about your age. I think you talked about children with beards. claiming they're a certain age and they're not. The other thing that was stunning to me is good guys and bad guys burn their fingertips so that they don't have any record of fingerprints. And that could be a villain too, as you point out. It could be a bad guy who's over here and doesn't want you to know he's a bad guy, or a good guy who did it because they don't want to be identified back home.
It's pretty rare that they'll do this, but yeah, they will burn off their fingertips either with fire or with acid. And a good guy might do this because he's trying to run away, and if someone catches you halfway through and then you're sent back, then you want to be able to hide who you are because maybe you're a dissident or whatever. But it could be that you're a torturer. You're a torturer who doesn't want to face justice in your home country, and so you try to launder your identity launder your physical shape, you know, with your fingertips. It's a pretty extreme thing to do. Because if you get sent back, then you'll have to face justice. So even to find out that someone is lying, that just tells you, or is concealing his identity, that just tells you that there's something, some pretty important
something's going on, major. Exactly, major deal. Also, you mentioned, which I never thought of, is that just about every one of these refugees has a phone, and at the Banff centers, they're allowed, if you have no passport or no identity papers and can't prove who you are, they're allowed to confiscate the phone. They can't look at your messages, but they can look at your metadata. They can look at where you're from, photos, see if there's pictures in Turkey. If you say you were somewhere a month ago, are the phone calls emanating from there or talking to somebody from there? I didn't realize that was a resource they could use.
Yeah, they've got great tech on this front. So if you say, oh, well, I left Syria and I went through Turkey and I went up the West Balkans route, they can take your phone, and most of the time you're not going to have a passport. You'll say that you lost it along the way, and maybe you have. Maybe you've intentionally lost it. But if they'll look at the phone, and they'll find, oh, this guy's making a lot of phone calls to Tunisia for some reason. And in fact, there was a phone call made from Tunisia when he said he was on the West Balkans route.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's a strong indication that this person's actually from Tunisia and then doesn't get the benefit of refugee status.
And then to get another overview of this, so phone, you got facial recognition, you've got ability to check where they're from and landmarks. But the thing that blew me away, too, is people can lie about their language capabilities, because if you're not from Syria, well, you want to say you're not from Syria, you can't know the language, etc. There's a computer that they put you on the phone with that determines where you're from, and you tried to fool it, and it did pretty well with you, correct?
Yeah, it pretty much hit a home run when I tried to fool it. I mean, I spoke into this computer, an incredible resource. It didn't know anything about me. Didn't know if I was a man or a woman. Didn't know what language I was speaking. At least I wasn't told in advance. And then it said, yes, man, and yes, American English, 100%. Then I tried to fool it by speaking Arabic, and it gave back a result that at first didn't look very impressive. It said, I can't tell what language this is, and maybe it's a bit of Vietnamese, maybe it's a bit of English, but nothing I can really sort out. And I told the Banff testers, your machine was fooled, wasn't it? And they said, no. If you really were from Egypt, and I was trying to speak Egyptian Arabic, which I can speak imperfectly, it would have said Egyptian Arabic, 100%. What it told us is that something fishy is going on. This is not a normal speech. This is someone trying to trick us. And it doesn't know how I was trying to trick it, but it just knew that I was not what I was saying. So if they got that indication in a real, live interview, they would know that something was fishy was going on, and that they would have to question further. So it worked, I think, startlingly, shockingly well.
Yeah, amazing. And also in 2016, another thing that was kind of strange was that they keep changing strategies, and they know, and there is a communication system, so people can tell people coming over what to say, what are the easiest things to get through, what are the easiest things to sneak through as far as comments, etc. But in 2016, you point out that you actually said every clan chief in Afghanistan decided to send their children or son to Germany as an anchor child, because then they could hopefully get in. It's easier to evade detection, correct?
Yeah, so that was something that was told to me by a Banff official, and he was exaggerating. It's not every clan chief, of course, but what I think he was pointing out is that there was a flow of knowledge that went all the way back to the source countries, and if someone discovered that, oh, apparently the Germans, you know, are really sympathetic if you say that you were tortured by the Afghan government, then that suddenly became a more common part of the story. People were responding to incentives on this refugee trail. And the discovery that Germany would not send back someone who was under the age of 18 or could claim to be meant that there was a strong incentive for families to send kids and as the kind of first line of refugee flow, and then bring the rest afterwards. So that's what happened in 2016, he said.
And the storytelling, again, we're just basically the tip of the iceberg here, but when people tell stories, and they're right in your story, if I was beaten, I remember that it was with a baseball bat, not a club. I remember I was on my knees on the floor. I remember I was begging for help. You remember details, and one of the tells is when people don't know details, or you all of a sudden say, you were beaten, that's horrible. What were you beaten with? And you have to pause and think about it. That's a pretty major tell, because it would stick out in your head as trauma about what you were beaten with. The article is staggering. Do we do this here? Are we doing some of these techniques? Do we share information based on what the demands are over here of immigration and where we're going with immigration and concerns in this country?
We do have what we have learned to call extreme vetting over here. So when a refugee comes to be resettled in the United States, then yes, we go through a lot of techniques, not quite the same level of rigor, but not quite the same level of need. We take in absolute numbers, pretty large number of refugees that have historically, many fewer now during the Trump period. What we don't have, though, we just don't have the same crisis that Germany faced with a million people arriving to a country of 60 or 70 million.
Graham, it was a fascinating piece. As a close here, emotionally, what did you feel about it? Because these are people. You're hearing stories. You're hearing people lie. You're hearing desperation. You're hearing bad people trying to get in. And you're trying to discern who they are. It must take its toll to these folks who have 10 minutes to decide a person's fate.
It does. It does. And what I really came away with this piece was an understanding that you know, you can be very sympathetic to refugees, and I think we morally have an obligation to bring in a lot of them. But one way to be sympathetic to them is to be rather strict with people who are pretending to be them. It means being sympathetic to them means being more intense in our scrutiny of people who are pretending to be them. So I think BAMF is doing the right thing by at least taking out that magnifying glass and making sure that refugees are brought in, treated well, and that those who are posing as them are sent home.
Well, because they're looked at, I think you called it the pearl. Everyone that comes in, it's a lie, is stopping someone who deserves it. Graham Wood, the piece is called The Refugee Detectives in Atlantic. You can read them in Atlantic all the time. His Twitter is at GCAW. The website is .gcaw.net. The piece, again, is The Refugee Detectives. You type that into Google, you'll find it. Read it. It'll blow your mind. And, Graham, thanks for a great piece. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Peter Till and the 10 continues. Hour number two. Hey, listen to McIntyre in the Morning and The Drive Home with Jillian and John all week for your chance to win a four-pack of tickets to Knox Boysenberry Festival, Food Fest, and live entertainment event now through April 8th. Get more info at kabc.com. And I can see the phones are starting to tick a little bit because people want to win tickets to see Lady Antebellum and Darius Rucker or Rodney Carrington at the City National Grove of Anaheim. Great concert. A great comedian. So call now 800-222-5222. We'll do the Peter Till the News Quiz, which we've taken out of mothballs occasionally. I've got a lot of current news stories to run by you in the news quiz. So let's do that next. 800-222-5222. Again, I pick you to play the news quiz. You do some multiple choice, true and false. You're going to see a great group, Lady Antebellum and Darius Rucker from Hootie and the Blowfish. Great, great performer. August 24th. Or Rodney Carrington, the comedian at the City National Grove of Anaheim. So a story that broke this morning. Who do you think they're blaming for exposing allegations at former White House staff secretary Rob Porter abused his 2 ex-wives. Who do you think did that? Well, supposedly, Porter's second wife told a reporter from New York Magazine that when Porter pressured her to take down a blog post in which she detailed his past abuses, he referred to a former staffer who may alert the media about the allegations. Who do you think they're saying it was? Corey Lewandowski, because he was smitten with Hope Hicks and hated seeing her date Rob Porter. Of course, he's denying it, but all fingers in the White House seem to point to him, and apparently he wants back into the White House in a big, big way. So he's being blamed for kicking that up. Also, he did not have a good feeling about Mr. Kelly, the chief of staff, and he feels like Kelly is the one who got him out, and he feels like he's keeping him out more than getting him out. So 800-222-5222. You want tickets to Lady Antebellum and Darius Rucker? You want to go see Rodney Carrington? Call now. Beat the rain. Beat the other calls because it's going to pop real quick. 800-222-5222. I'll take your calls next. We'll pick somebody to play the news quiz when Peter Till and the 10 continues right after the news.
KABC News is live and local at 11:30. I'm Jeff Whittle. And Austin police say the suspect in 5 package bombings, which killed 2 people, injured 4 others this month, is dead after blowing himself up as a SWAT team closed in on his car early this morning on the shoulder of Interstate 35 in Round Rock, Texas. That bomber identified as 24-year-old Mark Condit. A flood advisory has been issued for most of L.A. County and southwest Ventura County until 1:30 this afternoon. Rainfall rates up to a quarter inch to a half inch per hour could cause debris flows and roadway flooding. The storm expected to drop between 3 and 6 inches of rain total in the L.A. Basin and the local valleys. President Trump's reportedly furious over the leak that revealed he was warned by his own national security advisors against congratulating Russian President Vladimir Putin for winning re-election last weekend. That advice was ignored by President Trump. Correspondent Caitlin Collins reports.
They're saying the president is not very happy this morning, especially with whoever leaked that information about those briefing documents that he was given that told him not to congratulate Vladimir Putin on his election victory. And I'm told by sources the president has been asking his allies, his outside advisors, who they think leaked this information.
Mississippi's governor has appointed State Agriculture Commissioner Cindy Hyde Smith to succeed Republican Senator Thad Cochran, who's retiring on April 1st due to health problems. Talk Radio 790 KABC Sports. L.A. Kings lost to the Jets 2-1 in overtime in Winnipeg one night after the Kings beat the Wild in Minnesota in OT. Ducks, they go for their fourth straight win tonight when they visit the Calgary Flames. Clippers lost to the Timberwolves 123-109 last night for their fourth straight defeat. Lakers hope to avoid a fourth straight loss when they visit the Pelicans tomorrow afternoon. And that's sports on the home of the LA Kings, 790 KABC. Traffic, a market check, weather, and more till in a 10 next. KABC News Time is 11:32.
Talk with you, 790 KABC. Peter Tilton at 10 continues. Hour number two. Be safe. Leave yourself plenty of time because the rain is here and staying for quite some time. Let's do this quiz. The news quiz. Let's go to Doug in Chino Hills. How are you, Doug? Good morning.
Good, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. What do you do for a living, sir?
I'm in sales in the printing industry.
Meaning, by the way, a lot of printing still going on? Not as much emailing, advertising stuff? Steve, you can take that music down. What's that?
Packaging is, it's booming, but, you know, commercial printing is down a little bit.
All right, but you're doing okay.
I'm doing okay.
All right, so you know how we do this? You know how we do? Oh, wow, okay. We do true or false. We do multiple choice. Yes. You listen carefully. You win tickets, and you go see either Rodney Carrington or Lady Antebellum, and here we go. Ready? First question. Who controls the weather? A, the Jews. B, Dr. Evil from his lair inside a volcano. Or C, no one. Is it A, B, or C?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say C.
It is C. The Jews just, I think they just control drizzle, not full-on rain. Washington, D.C. council members apologized after posting a video in which he made anti-Semitic comments claiming that a Jewish family, the Rothschilds, were controlling the weather. Trayvon White, who's currently in his first term on the council, posted a video to his Facebook account on Friday of a snowy sky. And by the way, it is snowing in Washington. You can be heard narrating in the background about the cold weather. Did he really think he was going to post that and get an outpouring of love and affection and people going, yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. I hope the Jews don't make it rain on Saturday because I'm having a wedding. All right. Trump's advisors recently warned him not to, A, congratulate Russian President Vladimir Putin on his recent reelection. B, have sex with that porn star. C, have sex with that Playboy model. D, eat that second Big Mac. Is it A, B, C, or D?
I'm thinking it's A.
It is A. President Trump was infuriated after quickly leaked that he'd been directly instructed by his national security advisors in briefing materials not to congratulate Russian President Vladimir Putin. You know, I'm hearing that he's angry about the leak. I'm guessing the Russians could have leaked it. Isn't that kind of what they do? They found out and leaked it. What is an atmospheric river? What is an atmospheric river? It's been in the news. A, a plot device in Jerry Bruckheimer's new disaster flick, Stormpocalypse 2020. B, a weather pattern currently expected to deliver a lot of rain to Southern California this week. Or C, Bruce Springsteen's 1978 masterpiece album, Atmospheric River. Is it A, B, or C?
Let's go with B.
You are so smart. Atmospheric rivers are relatively long, narrow regions in the atmosphere, like rivers in the sky, that transport most of the water vapor outside of the tropics. These columns of vapor move with the weather, carrying an amount of water vapor roughly equivalent to the average flow of water at the mouth of the Mississippi River. There you go. The president of South Korea suggested the idea of a three-way, calm down, summit with Trump, Kim Jong-un, and A, Chinese President Xi Jinping, B, Dennis Rodman, or C, himself? Is it A, B, or C?
Let's go with C.
South Korean President Moon Jae-in raised the idea of a three-way summit among the two Koreas and the United States, depending on the outcome of a planned North-South summit next month, and President Donald Trump's meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. It's interesting. If you're looking at the literature right now that's coming out, in North Korea, they're not talking at all about the meeting. But they are saying that sanctions may be lifted. We also sent them a notice that we are going to be doing the maneuvers that we do with the South, the military maneuvers, just to let them know that they're not, they're defensive maneuvers and not offensive maneuvers. So, but not much in North Korea about the meeting. Former Vice President Joe Biden yesterday said he would have done what to Donald Trump if they'd attended school together? A, given him a wedgie he would not soon forget. B, beat the hell out of him. Or C, told the principal where he kept his stash of weed. Is it A, B, or C? A, B, or C?
Let's see. How about B?
Former Vice President Joe Biden took fresh jabs at President Donald Trump on Tuesday while speaking at an anti-sexual assault rally, telling students at the University of Miami that he probably would have beat the hell out of Trump if they attended school together. Although, reading about Trump in school, he could handle himself, supposedly. Got into fights and won. This took me back. I just remembered a friend of mine being hung in his locker by his underwear with a wedgie. Can you imagine today, if you did that to somebody, you'd be in jail? Then it was just a prank. All right, who won yesterday's Democratic primary in Illinois governor's race? Was it A, billionaire J.B. Pritzker? Was it B, Michael Jordan? Or C, Spider, an inmate who sells cigarettes at the Statesville Correctional Center? Is it A, B, or C?
Let's try A.
Yes, he won yesterday's Democratic primary. He's a billionaire. The guy he's running against, Bruce Rauner, is almost a billionaire. This is what the world is coming to now. And you know what I always say about running for governor in Illinois? The first act that I do if I become governor is I make sure that they upgrade the prisons. They put in better TVs, better beds, because I'll probably be going there as former governors are. All right. Tennis balls are what color? This would be an easy question. Would seem to be. Are they A, yellow, B, green, or C? It's up to you. A, B, or C?
How about C?
The answer lies in the eye of the beholder. The way light enters your eye plus existing knowledge over what color people associate with tennis balls plays into what color you see. How about that? I didn't know that. Tennis legend Roger Federer recently weighed in after being asked by a fan about the color of tennis balls. Tennis balls are yellow, so make of that what you will. Not the most important thing. And according to a survey by researchers at the University of Sheffield and the University of Exeter, what job makes people the happiest? Is it A, yoga instructors? Is it B, dog walkers? Or is it C, being self-employed? A, B, or C?
How about C?
According to a new survey, self-employed people are happier and more engaged with their jobs than those working in any other profession. Those who were self-employed were not only amongst the most engaged, but also experienced greater opportunities for innovation, achieving challenging targets, and meeting high standards. My sense of that is, if you're making a living and you're self-employed, you're happy. If you're not making a living, you're going under and you're self-employed, I don't think you're so happy. You did great, man. You sound like a good guy. Stay dry today and let Dino know which tickets you want, whether it's Rodney Carrington or Lady Antebellum, and hopefully we'll meet one day, Doug.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Yeah, you take it easy. Enjoy whichever tickets you choose. Coming up, I'll tell you a little bit more about what's happening with Facebook from an ex-employee who claims they should have known better. We'll discuss that next. 800-222-5222 is the phone number. Peter Tilden at 10 continues right after this.
When the rain comes, they run and hide their head.
Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilden at 10 continues hour number 2. Phone number 800-222-5222. So Facebook, still taking it in the shorts. The founder of WhatsApp, or the co-founder, amazingly, his name is Brian Acton, he sold his company to Facebook. He became a billionaire by selling his company to Facebook. He's now doing hashtag delete Facebook. He's saying they're dangerous, get away, they need more transparency. And right now, federal regulators, state prosecutors opening investigations into Facebook. You got politicians here and in Europe are calling for Chief Executive Mark Zuckerberg to testify before them. First, I got to make an observation here. Stevie, you tell me this. Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg. I looked it up. Mark Zuckerberg is worth currently $72.5 billion. He's 33 years old. If they called me for an investigation and I'm worth $72.5 billion, you know what I do? I go to Europe. I take a vacation. I say I'm out. I take my 800 hoodie collection and I say, you know what? I can live $72 billion. Who needs it? Who needs the aggravation? It fascinates me. These guys who make their first billion and they keep going. I guess you have to have that personality to keep going and wanting to keep going after your first billion. You give me a couple mil and I'm on a boat somewhere and anybody gives me aggravation, I go, see you later. With 72 bill, there is no aggravation in my life. I would have babysitters. I remember Kenny Rogers, who's not a billionaire, was, when he came in studio. He must have been in his 70s, and his wife, he had married a young wife, twins. He married a young wife and they were having twins. And I remember Kenny Rogers, this goes to the point of when you have money. So I looked at him and I said, Kenny, you in your 70s, you're having babies. How are you going to do that? He said, I'm never going to touch them. I have people. That's what I would do if I'm Zuckerberg. I would not put up with any of this nonsense. But it appears that the deal is, according to a person who used to work there, worked at Facebook, that they had an arrangement in 2011 where they were notified that they had to alter their performance and alter their ways and adjust, and they haven't done it. They violated supposedly a FTC consent decree, which was put together in 2011 about what could you do with all the app providers that you were giving information to. So he said that, or this person said, in 2011 and 2012, they led a team responsible for data policy violations, and it, like Farmville, Candy Crush. The company didn't care about protecting users' data then, and apparently they don't care now. So what happens is whenever an authorized app connects to Facebook, you see a dialog box that asks for permission to grant the app access to data from your Facebook account. But what most people don't know, it also might ask for information listed on your public profile, like your name, or it might ask for more personal things, like your friends list, your photos, or other data that isn't publicly available. They let developers go there and quickly build these giant data sets for many users' information, and they didn't police it at all. And he said, when they find out that they may be abusing it, you know what their recourse is? They would supposedly call and say, hey, are you abusing it? If the person said no, the app developer, okay, that's it. So they could demand an answer, they could demand an audit, and they can pull the application. But he said in his entire time there, even abuse after abuse after abuse, they never once demanded an audit. They looked the other way. They could sue a developer for breach of the policies, or they could take away their right to the platform. They never did it. And he says, I believe the reason for lax reinforcement was simple. Facebook didn't want to make the public aware of the huge weaknesses in its data security. So I'm an app developer. I contact them and I say, I want to mine your information. I do it illegally. I sell it to a third party. The only way, if they hear that I'm doing it, the only way they can check is do an audit or call me. That's it. They did no follow-up. So apparently he's saying things have not changed since 2012, even though the company said they'd got a much better process in place now. But he's saying if that's the truth, well, Cambridge Analytica would be a side note at this point. They would have sued them out of existence, but they're using the same playbook that they used in 2011, 2012. This person, who I'm going to try to get on, claims that they protested then because they led a team for data policy violations and wrote a brief, handed it to Facebook and said, here are the violations. What are you going to do about it? Person said it was buried. It was never addressed, and they're continuing the same policies that they did. Sheryl Sandberg, who is a top deputy for the company, and Mark Zuckerberg, completely quiet. We're not seeing anything. Today there was a press release that came out that said Zuckerberg will address the issue within the next 24 hours, and I did happen to see that he's got an all-company meeting tomorrow because their stock going down the tubes in a big way, also investment right now. People are holding their breath. They're not investing money. They want to see where Facebook's going to go because this could be a bigger story than it even is now if they find out that there's other breaches that they didn't follow up on. And I guess if this person's correct, that they, in 2011, 2012, may have violated this FTC consent decree, okay? If they didn't do it, now I see why they don't want to get in front of the government and talk about it because they didn't do what they promised they would do. Supposedly, they have already sent their lawyers and their lobbyists to Washington to talk to lawmakers to try and, I guess, pave the way for Zuckerberg coming in there because he doesn't want to be blindsided. Again, you have $72 billion. You don't want an aggravating day on Capitol Hill. You don't want to be made fun of. You don't want to be asked tough questions you don't know the answers to because the optics would be horrible. And if they are vulnerable and left themselves vulnerable and didn't do what they were supposed to do, it's going to be tough for him to answer questions. Hence, you're not seeing him a whole lot, and you're not seeing Sheryl Sandberg a lot. So they're probably building their defense of why they didn't do what they said they were going to do since 2011 to protect our data. Because I didn't sign up for this. If I'm one of the 50 million, they didn't ask me if they could mine my data. They got it by kind of backdooring it with his app, and then the app ended up taking mine and 50 million other people's data and mining it and sending it out and using it to try and manipulate an election, to sell it to people to manipulate election. And it's not just the Trump Organization, and it's not just this company, this Analytica company. It's other companies that did it. We don't know how widespread it is. So lots of questions going to be asked on the Hill in the next week or two about Facebook, how they operate as a private company, and what they're doing with their data. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Peter Till and the 10 continues after this.